Daryl Weiss would perform these larger venues, and she got blown out on it or tired of it. So she just showed up. And now people come from Charlotte to the wine bar to listen to her. And she's kind of a cross between Roberta Flack and Tracy Chapman.
Oh, wow.
And so she's kind of amazing.
So now how far out of Charlotte is Tryon?
It's an hour and a half to the airport.
Okay. All right. So you're sort of smack in the middle of Asheville and Charlotte.
Well, I tell people sort of that Tryon's on the way to everywhere.
Okay.
You can be in Asheville or Hendersonville in no time. You can be in Greenville or Spartanburg in no time. You can be at the Charlotte airport in an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And you can be in downtown Atlanta in 3 hours.
It's a good place.
Or you can be over here 4 miles off the interstate where no one can find you unless you want them to. And 2 miles that way is this great lake for boating and small sailboats and skiing. Right up at the top of this mountain over here is a view unrivaled by airplane windows.
Wow.
And in the middle, we have this 55-acre park across the street that has stables and ball fields and tennis courts and everything in the whole wide world. And this charming little downtown.
Wow.
And then all of civilization is right there on the interstate. And so it's kind of like an ideal situation. I don't know really why the downtown is struggling because it is so perfect. But nobody right now wants to invest a dime in much of anything. Because there's a lot of businesses that would be great on the main street and very affordable buildings and rent and everything else. So we've really been promoting it. But anyway, we get into the election situation and we get to the first thing where we actually all had to participate in something. And that was a forum. And I've never done a forum before. And alphabetically, I'm first. And so this forum is actually hosted by the anti-annexation people. Again, nobody knows what my position on this annexation is, but a lot of people made assumptions. And so, you know, we sit up on this stage, and I had 11 points of things I'd like to see happen in the downtown. And those are the important things to me. So I mentioned those things. I introduced myself, mentioned those things, and we go over to them. You get 3 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever it was. Then on down the line, the other four people gave biographies of themselves. My name is, I've lived here this year, I have 2 daughters, I'm in Rotary, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we're in Tryon. We know where your dog lifts his leg every day. We know you have daughters. We know you're in Rotary. You know, we all, you know, that was a waste of 3 minutes apiece. So then they started asking questions. And, of course, I was getting all these annexation questions. And I said, frankly, unless I'm elected, I'm not going to get into this. And if I am elected, I'll have to make a decision, and I'll look into it at that point. But otherwise, it's a waste of time as far as I'm concerned. Here are things I'd like to see happen, and these are things I would work on. And that was all I ever said. So then the only other advertising I did was in the paper. I just had a picture, and it said Serving Tryon, and we kind of did it on a platter, and I had the town of Tryon sitting on a platter. But what had happened earlier in the year, do you remember the letter that someone wrote to Dr. Laura about the biblical nature of homosexuality and all the, in Leviticus where it's like, you know, a man should not lie with a man or whatever. But then on the other thing, is everything else that went along in that letter was, you know, you can sell your daughter into slavery and all these other things. But do you know anything about
that? I don't remember that. I mean, I can remember a big controversy with her, but
if you Google it, you'll find this letter. Okay, well, then somebody recreated that letter for George Bush later. Well, someone wrote here locally about the Lutheran split in the church, and the person that wrote was a Lutheran, local Lutheran minister, and he was on the conservative side, and he wrote a letter about what an abomination that this lifestyle was. So I recreated that letter and enhanced it with some things, and I didn't submit it to the paper. I sent it to the editor of the paper, who's a friend of mine, and said, you might consider some of these points. Well, he simply just published it, and he didn't credit it correctly. But it got a lot of attention, and it went on for a couple pages. And, I mean, I went through every biblical thing, like, you know, what would my sister be worth at slave auction on these days? And one of the things in this particular biblical section, if you have any hindrance of your vision, you cannot approach the altar of God. And the minister out there has to wear glasses. Well, he's supposed to be put to death based on the Old Testament there. So we just made some observations like that. It went on very long. It was very sarcastic.
Okay.
And I got a lot of responses in the paper. Huh. On election day, uh-huh. there was a full-page ad, a full-page letter in the paper, a hate letter directed uh-huh. at me right next to my ad.
Wow.
So I really kind of thought, you know, and at that point I really had not pushed this at all because the two incumbents were running again. I could approach them and I was uh-huh. fine talking to them and I wasn't all that enthralled. Well, election day comes and the guy who was anti-annexation got the most votes. 6 more than I did. Mm-hmm. And everybody else was in the dust. Mm-hmm. Now, I know why they elected him. He had one issue. That was pretty easy to figure out. They elected me for several reasons. Name recognition. I have businesses in town. Mm-hmm. They don't know who the hell I was. They don't know whatever. But I thought it was kind of ironic that here's this hate letter on election day with my picture mm-hmm. next to it running for... And I still won and did pretty well. So obviously, there's no sentiment with the exception of a handful of people in mm-hmm. this community. And it was from a biblical standpoint, not from a personal standpoint. Because mm-hmm. even though those all the letters that were written, even though they were directed to me, they really weren't directed at me. So, okay, so now here I am, an elected official.
Mm-hmm. And now what's your elected position?
I'm a commissioner.
Okay. County?
Town commissioner.
Yes, okay.
So mm-hmm. that was a big surprise to me. I really did not anticipate that happening, especially with 5 people running, especially with people who knew a whole lot more about politics than I do. And anybody who's been on any of these committees in the town with me knows that I have... my best sense is a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of bring that to the table and take away all the staunchiness of everything. Okay. And that's also now happening in the political situation too, because I don't take too many things seriously. I mean, that's just not my nature. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of changed the overall perspective of the council, because I'm the one that's constantly quoted, because I'll say not off the wall things, but if they call me or need me to write something, I'll write. Mm-hmm. And I'll say what I think. And I'll apologize if somebody has a better mm-hmm. way of putting it, or I'll apologize if I said the wrong thing or if I got misquoted. Mm-hmm. And I invite people to give me their ideas all the time. And if somebody has a better idea that's 180 degrees the other direction, I'll buy into it. You know, whatever's best, but until you have an idea, let's throw some ideas. These are some of mine. Pick them apart. Mm-hmm. And we'll go with that. So it's been really interesting because our first meeting was in December. And I feel
2009.
Like,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've had, 5 meetings now? I haven't had the May. And I feel like we've actually, in the 5 meetings we've had, started to accomplish some major things that in the past when I've attended some of these meetings just as a spectator... Nothing happens. Hmm. And we've got assets in town. We've got buildings that can be used. I wanted a youth center right across the street here at this park, mm-hmm. Which is already full of kids all the time, but there are a lot of kids that don't play sports but want to be around their friends mm-hmm. and don't really have a place. So we have an empty building over there that the town owned. I did have to get involved in the annexation issue, and I did promise a on the day after I was elected, I got a question from the paper. Okay, now you're going to have to do this, so look into it. So I said, all right, my approach is going to be this. I'd like to know what everybody thinks about it. Mm-hmm. So write me and tell me. Here's the email address. And boy, did they start coming. And I think of all the emails, phone calls, and personal confrontations I got, 7 people were for annexation. Everyone else was overwhelmingly against it. And the people that were most against it were the people who were of the 800 homes that would have been annexed into this community. Hmm. Their taxes would have been doubled. The interesting issue is they didn't have any way to vote on that issue because they were outside the town. Mm-hmm. And until they were annexed into the town, they couldn't vote. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the town in this house. I had to voluntarily annex this piece of property to be able to run.
Okay.
And to be able to vote. And then I'm against annexation in the end. I didn't know I was at the time, but now I am. So I looked at the plan. I wrote in the paper that I would have a deadline of December 15th, and I would make a decision at that December board meeting, mm-hmm. at the council meeting. We didn't print the article in time, and about the 10th December, the 12th is when the article goes out. So they said, could we extend it? So I said December 31st. Well, I'd gotten such an overwhelming response, and I looked into a few things, that by that 15th December, 16th or 17th meeting, whatever the third Tuesday of December was, mm-hmm. I had made up my mind. And I looked at the construction aspect of the plan, and it didn't make sense to me. I didn't see how it could possibly be done in the budget that had been proposed, and I didn't really think the engineers had done some consideration to, and part of the plan was we would have to deliver services to those homes, including sewer and water, in a specific amount of time. And if you've ever dug in the dirt in western North Carolina, there's granite. Well, the engineers had allowed a 3% margin for running into rock, and we would have used that 3% up in the first house. So, and a lot of these houses sat below the road, and we're going to have to put in pumps, generators in case the power went out, two-day holding tanks. And these people already have a perfectly good septic in the backyard that doesn't leak around. I mean, you know, so, but we're forcing these people to switch to these services for tax revenue. So anyway, I voted against it, and I was the one, because the guy had gotten in. Okay. One issue was no annexation. The guy was already there from 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The mayor was for it, and a sitting council member was for it. So here I came with no one knowing what I was thinking, including myself. And so I wrote the mayor and said, you know, this is my feeling on this situation, and this is why. And he used to come into my business every day until he got that letter. He's never darkened the door since. But it was my vote that changed it. And that got a lot of attention. The editor of the paper was for annexation. And the mayor was for it. And so there was a lot of negativity about it. And that was strictly from a political standpoint, not, you know, oh, you know, because he must wear pink somewhere, he can't think right or something. I don't know. There was nothing directed at me personally, but just my ideas. But we got past that when the county announced that they were going to cancel the barbecue festival this year, and that took the headlines away. And ever since then, subsequently, we're having the barbecue festival. But geez, that took all the heat off my back after I don't know, maybe 60 days of just nasty articles of why we should or shouldn't have annexation, or what's going to become of the town because we do or don't have it, and all those sorts of things. So that's kind of how I got into politics of everything. And again, the only reason I really did that is because I have businesses on the main street, and nobody else really think on the council really thinks about businesses from an owning one. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they try and think about them, but it would be a different perspective when you're there every day knowing what can or can't go wrong, and what is and isn't going wrong, and why people aren't in town. So that's kind of how, A, I ended up in Tryon, how I got into a relationship, and... You know, I mean, when we do anything in town, we go together as a couple. I mean, there's no, you know, nobody makes any assumptions that they have a girlfriend in hiding or something. They all know what the deal is. So.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't get to meet.
He's at work now. We have, and this county has some amazing things. One of them is this, it's a healing farm. For people with, I don't want to be misquoted and say, but I think mental disorders might be the best description, but they have a website. You can get their description. It's called Cooper Reese.
Okay.
And it's COOPER-RIIS. And it's for people who have addiction problems or bipolar syndrome or just different things. And it's a place for them to go recover or be reintegrated into society in different ways if they've had substance abuse problems or whatever. And it's the most amazing place. It's a beautiful facility. It's quite expensive to be there. And there are two of those types of facilities in this county that people from all over the world come to. This is mainly the younger ones is where he works. And it's quite a place. And he really likes it. He works intensely on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, like 10, 12 hours a day. So, but he should be home by 6 or so. So I don't know. Now you can ask me whatever questions you want, but that's kind of how I got here and how I got into politics.
I guess I do have a question around the politics, because it sounds like from what you're saying, you're in the rather unusual situation where it doesn't matter that you're gay and out as a politician. That doesn't seem to be the case for many people who try to enter politics or actually make it into politics. So,
well, I think maybe that's because they make an issue out of being gay. Hmm. And I went to all-boys boarding school when I was 12 years old. Everybody I must have been very obvious, and I didn't know it, but my nickname was Faggot. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was a bad thing, and that frustrated them even more. I was an athlete, and I made very good grades, and I was the teacher's pet. So I was hated because I was the teacher's pet, misunderstood because I was gay, but I was an athlete, which was very important in the 70s. And we had a very small school, and we were very good in soccer. Mm-hmm. And from the ninth grade on, I played on the varsity team. So they didn't know how to deal with that. Yeah. I was a good team member, but they didn't like me for other reasons. But that didn't stop them from crawling through my windows in the middle of the night, because I had quite, you know, there were quite a few people there that we had a very nice time for the 5 years I was in boarding school. And, I mean, to this day, you know, I look on Facebook now, and I've started to look up some of those old people. You know, they're all married with kids and whatever. And
they don't want to reminisce about old times. Well, no,
I would never even do that.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting that, you know, I don't know, they're all pot-bellied, bald, and just it's just interesting to kind of look at them and to remember what they looked like in boarding school and that sort of thing.
Right.
And how many of them used to, like, you know, we'd sneak off together, or they'd sneak in my room late at night. And they were not the ones that would pick on me, but they wouldn't come to my aid if somebody else did. So that was kind of an interesting thing. But I was pretty independent at age 12.
Right. So, I mean, did you know about being gay, or did you feel gay?
It wasn't an issue to me. That was just me being me. Uh-huh. I'd had boy goings on before I went away to boarding school when I was 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. And this older guy had, he used to come over. And when I say older, he was like 14 and I was 10. But he had pubic hair. I was amazed. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a big mystery for me.
Sure.
And, you know, we fooled around all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to boarding school, so it was not an unnatural thing. And I didn't think twice about it. I didn't think I was any different than anybody else. Mm-hmm. I didn't really care. I never thought about it in that perspective. And so I have a real interesting time trying to understand people who come out. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't do that. It was okay. It was just always the way it was, and I just assume everybody's always the way they were, and I really never understood trying to hide things about yourself. And then I realized later, as I was getting older, how people would pick on other people, because there were other gay people there, but they didn't want to really be friends with me, because then they would have thought to have been gay. Mm. But the people that were my friends didn't care what people thought, and they weren't gay. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting, but I never had the coming out experience. Mm-hmm. I never had to. Mm-hmm. I never saw the need to. I have a little brother that's gay, and we have the same father. But we had a real interesting situation because, oh no, my mother's on her husband X to the nth power at this point. Okay, so there's lots of siblings, and my mother and father were divorced when I was a baby. And so I really didn't spend much time with my dad, but it was very obvious my little brother was gay. And that was of no concern to me one way or the other. But his mother, my stepmother, was so close, I guess, that she didn't see it, and friends of hers would point it out to her, and that was a major problem for her. And that I was so open about whoever, oh, this is my boyfriend or this is my girlfriend or whatever, didn't really put any, you know, how serious a girlfriend or boyfriend was, you know, just being me. Mm-hmm. She was my stepmother was very uncomfortable with that. And basically tried to always, for many years, protect my little brother from her friends pointing out that he was obviously going to be gay. Come on. I mean, you know, he's the nelliest thing in the world, and he still is. And my stepmother had a very hard time with that. She would deny it. She did not like me to come visit because she thought I would influence him. I visited one day a year, and that was around Christmas. And so there's some really difficult stories of the relationship that we had at that particular time. And something changed her, and I don't know what it was. But I had a relationship probably in 1982 when I lived in Atlanta before I left Florida State. got into a relationship. We ended up moving to Atlanta. But my little brother ended up coming to Florida State at the same time I was there. My little brother has a full sister who was also at Florida State at the same time. Mm. And my mother had a daughter with another husband who lived in Tallahassee. Mm. So even though she was no relations, we have four siblings that really kind of were interactive but not really related. And we all had a very nice time. And my mother lived there and watched out for all of them. Mm. And my stepmother and dad would come up, and I had a boyfriend. And my stepmother really liked him. Mm. He was, you know, she just thought the world of him. And from that, I don't know what started her to be open-minded about it. I don't know who turned her around. But, you know, from that point on, we would go visit. Mm-hmm. And then I got into another relationship that lasted 8 or 9 years, and we would always go visit. And to this day, my ex and that, we've been apart since 1996. He still goes and visits him. Mm-hmm. So, she became this completely different person, absolutely completely different person. And it became quite a joy to be around her. And she's there now, extremely supportive of anything and everything, including my little brother. But her parents used to give my little brother and I for Christmas these Playboy calendars. And so a real interesting conversation happened one time not too long before they both died, in the last 5 or 6 years, I think. But they relayed this conversation later, after they were both dead. They said, you know, your grandmother and grandfather just asked us one time, was Doug gay? And my dad kind of sheepishly said, yes. And then they said, well, is Chip gay? And Dad said, yes. He said, yeah, I guess I'm the contributing factor, being the dad of both of us. And they said, well, that didn't really matter, that they were embarrassed that they'd given us Playboy calendars all those years, because if they would have known, they would have given us Playgirl calendars. That was the only issue. They felt bad because they weren't in the loop and would have been fine with it, much more so than their daughter. So that also tells me it wasn't my stepmother's upbringing. It was because they were very open-minded. And I don't think there's anybody in my family that's closed-minded, including any of my mother's husbands, and they come from the extremely far right to where they're off the scale to the extremely far left. Huh. And, you know, she's on five husbands we know about, and I know there's a few in between. So, but every family member I've ever met, it's never even been an issue. And so that's why there was no coming out. It was just like, oh, that's Doug. I had cousins that, when I got out of boarding school, when I was in boarding school, I would get once a week a letter from a great aunt I didn't know. And it would be a book, a mystery book. And in it would be a card with an addressed envelope to my grandmother, my dad's mother, who was much more ill at the time than I knew. At 12 years old, I didn't know she was sick. And so I would sign it and send it on. So every week, she would get a card. And so this great aunt that I'd never met, my grandmother died my first year at boarding school, and my grandfather died the next year. I didn't know these great aunts and uncles, but when I got out of boarding school, and I think a couple of years had gone by, so I was at my third or fourth college by then, I had met this guy, and we decided we were going to take the summer off. And so I thought, well, let's connect with relatives and things. And we didn't have internet and all this kind of stuff at that point, so I called this great aunt through information and found out, I guess they had some sort of way when I found their number. Fortunately, not enough time had gone by, but I called the number and it gave me a forwarding number. They had moved to Maryland and moved in with their daughter and son-in-law because they'd gotten old. And it gave me that number. So I called, and this lady answers the phone, Holly. She's my dad's first cousin. And I introduced myself and said, we're going to be in the Washington area, and we're just going to go do the East Coast. And she's like, well, that's great. Can you come this week? And we'll have a big family reunion. She said, you've got cousins you've never met, two older, two younger, blah, blah, blah. All well and good. We make time. So she calls the first daughter, who's closest to my age, and says, your cousin Doug is coming to visit, whom you never met. And his friend Doug. And the first thing out of the cousin's mouth that's my age is, are they gay? And the mother says, oh, I don't know. What should we do? And she said, well, when they get there, you know, tell them how many people are coming and tell them that they've got to share a room and give them their choice of the rooms, the one with one bed or the one with two. So that's what they did. Mm-hmm. We took the one with one bed. It was, I mean, that's just the way it was. Every family member just never, it was like, which one are you more comfortable in? Okay, mm-hmm. that's fine. There was never like any kind of reaction or anything. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm very fortunate in that respect, hearing many stories of different groups I got involved in when I lived in Asheville, different gay support groups and things that I got involved in from a leadership standpoint, mm-hmm. and hearing really horrible stories and meeting 18-year-old kids that would show up at this meeting with a suitcase because their family, they turned 18 and here, get out. So, you know, I just didn't experience any of that. Yeah. I don't think Josh experienced any of that. But I do hear a lot of it. So I'm just, I guess I'm fortunate we didn't have to do that. So I don't know what other, if you've got other.
I mean, I was sort of thinking where I wanted to go. You've talked about a little bit about it being a great place to live, a wonderful place. How is it, do you think, is it a place where gay people can have a good life, enjoy themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually trying to recruit people. Hard. Well, I think it's not too far remote given our geographical location mm-hmm. to all those places. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will go to Asheville because, you know, it's densely populated with same-sex couples. Mm-hmm. And they'll get there and they realize they like the area, but they don't quite want to live in it or on top of it. So they will kind of start to fan out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's why we have a large gay population here. I think we have a large gay population here because of the wealth that has been in this area. Mm-hmm. And I think regardless of the era of this country, if you were wealthy, you could do a lot and you could get away with it. So a lot of people probably hung out here. Yeah. And there's a huge Charlestonian connection here. There's a huge Florida connection. So we're literally halfway between Manhattan and Palm Beach. Yeah. In the old days, when you're traveling by coach or by train or whatever, it would be a good place to stop. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly why the Vanderbilts ended up in Asheville. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good logical spot. And when they got out here, it was like, wow, this place is amazing. Some of the oldest vineyards in the United States are right here. Hmm. I mean, you can look out the window and I can point them out to you. So there was a lot of appeal.
Let me see. Sure. I'm going to try.
Just for the area in general.
Yeah.
Briars or Bluebell's fine. Okay. That was important to know which ice cream brand.
Hey, that is important. I don't want to get the wrong thing.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not there.
I think that's still recording. Let me just double check.